Okay, so in Parshat Chayesara, there's a lot of very interesting shadals. A few years ago, I did shadal like pretty much every day as an intro, kind of like while guys are settling in and getting their coffee to afternoon seder. So the first comment of shadal on Chayesara is very fascinating because it deals with a problem that should like strike you when you first start reading the Parsha. I just want to tell you guys, like, in short, even though I don't want to focus on it because I already have a recording of it on Wahyu Torah, so I want to do other comments of Shadal, but I think it's interesting and important to talk about for a second that in the beginning of the Parsha it says like this, a very strange repetition. It says, Vayu Chayei Sarah, it was the life of Sarah was, meaning she had passed away, so here was how much she had lived, Me'ah Shana, what does that mean? Me'ah Shana? Me'ah is how much? 100 years. The Esrim Shana, and 20 years. V'sheva Shanim, and 7 years. Ashenei Chayei Sarah. These are the years of Sarah, of the life of Sarah. So there's obviously multiple repetitions here, right? And so what's the idea of 100 years and 20 years and 7 years? She says that this tells us that we're supposed to darshan each one against each other and compare them as numbers against each other. So here's what Rashi says. Rashi says when she was 100, she was like a 20-year-old in terms of sinlessness. And when she was 20, she was as beautiful physically as a 7-year-old. That should strike you as strange. Multiple levels.
Toby as strange last night.
It did? Okay, he had that question as well. So that, on multiple levels, that should be very strange, right? Because when it comes to a 20-year-old, why are they sinless? A 20-year-old can be so very sinful. So Rashi actually inserts an explanation that actually doesn't come from the Midrash, where he says, well, technically, you have to be 21 to be prosecuted by the courts. If you're 20, you're technically not prosecutable, at least in terms of like the death penalty and getting whipped and things like that. So you're sinless in the eyes of the court, so to speak. Right? There's no juvie in Judaism. Right? So that's Rashi, and it's very strange. And the other strange thing is when it comes to beauty. What does it mean to be as beautiful as a 7-year-old? Shadal has a solution for this. He says he thinks that Rashi saw a midrash that had the wrong girsa. And here's how it should really go. It should be that when she was 100, she was as beautiful as a 20-year-old, physically. When she was 20, she was as sinless as a 7-year-old. Does that make more sense? It makes a lot more sense, right? Now, you can't just do that, right? You can't just change midrashim. You can't just change Rashi. So he says, I think Rashi just saw a midrash that got it flipped around. And he says that he found a version of the midrash, like in manuscript, that he found it in his town in the tree, and he has the prominence of the sons of Manoach Moshe Aryeh Triasti, like one of the Trieste that's in Italy. One of the families there had this ancient manuscript of the midrash that actually has this version in it. So he says that's the original version. Rashi copied it based on the version that he saw, but he thinks that is ultimately incorrect. What do you do with Rashi in that case? I still think that there's a lot to learn out, but that solves, I think, the situation a little bit. That makes us feel a little better. Beauty in terms of a 20-year-old, that makes a lot more sense. And sinlessness in terms of a 7-year-old, that also makes a lot more sense. Okay, that's point number one. I think it's an important one. You know, you can't just go around changing manuscripts. You can't just go around saying, you know, cross this Rashi off the list. You know, it's not accurate. But you can start to figure out, like, what do Chazal actually say? And is it bothersome, or is it just because we have a mistaken version? And that kind of gets us back onto a right, you know, correct standing. Okay, that's one thing I wanted to point out. Now I want to run through some very short Rashis on Perek Chafdalet. Perek Chafdalet Chayesara. In Bereshit, it says that Abraham was old, Babi Amim, he was old, lots of repetition, right? Vashem Beirach et Abraham Bakol. And God blessed Abraham Bakol. So what's Bakol? Bakol. So Rashi says that refers to, right? How much is Bakol in Gematria?
52.
What is another 52?
The week from the earth.
52 weeks. He doesn't go that way. He goes 52 is the same gematria as Ben. So it means that Avram had another son. He was blessed with a son. Right? And that actually introduced, meaning that it was not it was Yitzchak. He was blessed with Yitzchak. But that introduces the problem of now he has to marry off Yitzchak. So according to Rashi, it flows like that he was Baruch Bakol. Obviously, Rashi said there's a multiple levels here. First of all, it can't be that he was blessed by Kol.
Are you doing the copy?
I'm not doing any copy.
Okay.
What does it mean he was blessed by Kol if the next story is about how he doesn't have, he's trying to marry off his son? So he's not blessed by Kol because he doesn't have a daughter-in-law and he has to worry about his son, right? So that's on one level. And number two is how can anybody ever be blessed by Kol? I saw someone give an answer. I was reading an article online of somebody saying that the reason why Rashi even deals with gematria, why is he going gematria? Why doesn't he just say, oh, Bakol refers to his son, like, and just make it up, right? Gematria doesn't make it any better. So I saw that the answer was, like, because Bakol means, like, infinite allness, right? Bakol means he was blessed with everything. But it's obvious that he can't be blessed with everything. He didn't have infinite wealth. He didn't have infinite power. You know, what does it mean, Bakol? So it has to be limited in some way. By converting it into a number, Rashi was saying, no, it was according to Avram's perspective. It's all about perspective. When you have a perspective of, I'm happy with my lot, what I have with my right now, when you put it into a number and say that it's quantifiable and I can focus my perspective on what I appreciate, then you're blessed by Kol, even if you don't have infinite power and infinite wealth and infinite blessing. It means that you're you feel blessed, right? Who's the person who is wealthy? Was the Mishnah Pirkei Avot saying? Who's wealthy? Hasameach v'chalko, right? The person who's happy with what he has. So that's really, that's their solution for why Rashi gets into gematria, like converting it into a number, making it quantifiable and not infinite, turns it into an actual like perspective. Okay, so what does Shaddal say? So he says like this: Hatam shahaya ashir. According to as against Rashi, he says it's about a son. Shaddal says it's about being rich. He was rich. His kirza. So then why is it mentioning it? Rashi has a good answer, right? Because now we're about to talk about his son and the thing that he needs to do, which is marry off his son. But Shaddal, why does it have to say that he was rich? What's that? How does that help us with the story, the narrative? His kirze mentions this. Lehodia, he lo mevilti nashim hachefatzot liz davok livno shalachet avdo lemishpachto. Don't think that there was a lack of women who wanted to marry into Avram's family. Avram did not struggle to find a shidduch for his son. He was the rich guy in town. Right? A lot of women were lining up out the door saying, I'm an available bachelorette, and your son is an available bachelor, let's do this, right? But Avram did not have that issue. The issue is, right, everybody, apparently this comes from the Rashbam, everybody wants to marry the rich guy, right? Or marry the rich guy's son. So Avram was specifically avoiding these people who lived in this town. Why does he send Eved Avram to Avram's family all the way by Lot? What's the reason why he sends him there? Oh, you think? Oh, that's interesting. So Shaddal doesn't say that. That's interesting, meaning he doesn't want the girl who wants to marry the rich guy. Maybe. That's number one. Number two is that he only wanted to marry within his family. He was afraid of marrying the Canaanites. Right? And in fact, that's the beginning of the story. He gets the servant of Avram, right, Eliezer, to swear to him that he will not seek out any Canaanite woman to marry off Yitzchak to, right? He'll only go to the family and use the family. So is that, like, racist? Is he really against the Canaanites? Or he just wants to marry in the family? He wants to keep the bloodline pure? Is that what's going on? That would be, I don't know, offensive a little bit. I mean, maybe. Okay, so let's get into this a little bit. So a few short comments from Shaddal. Number one is, what does it mean when Avram asks Eved Avram, Eliezer, to swear to him by putting his hand under his thigh? Puts his hand under his thigh. How does Rashi understand that? It comes from the Gemara. How does Rashi understand that? Puts his hand under his thigh. It means that he holds on to his bris milah. hold on to my bris milah and swear to me. So that's obviously very strange. So Rashi's like, it's like holding a Sefer Torah. It's a mitzvah. They didn't have a Sefer Torah because it was before the giving of the Torah. So he held on to the only mitzvah that, Dvar Kedusha. Maybe think of, just write God's name or something like that and say, hold that. But so very strange imagery, obviously, right? It definitely doesn't accord with us today, although I will say that in the time, thousands of years ago, they didn't have the same prudishness, I think, that we do with these kinds of things. But I think it still sounds strange.
Especially for a serious one, swearing to God.
Yeah, exactly, right? It's very strange. So, according to Rashi, yeah, okay, fine. That's how it is, right? Rashi says, Lefisha nishmat tzarech shiito biyado chefetz shel mitzvah, because if you want to do an actual swearing, you have to hold something that is a object of a mitzvah, like a Sefer Torah, a mezuzah, or tefillin. But the only thing that they had was mila. Okay, fine. Haita chaviva alav. Was so beloved to Avram, this mitzvah that he performed, that he wanted to use that as the object. Again, probably to Rashi that would have sounded strange. How does Rashi understand that? It's not so clear. You can say that maybe he didn't actually hold it. Maybe it was or symbolic, or it was over his clothes. I don't know if that helps at all. Fine. Okay. But here's what Shaddai says. Simna yadcha tachad yerechi. Put your hand under my thigh. Why is thigh in a reference to his genitals? What is the thigh? Because that's often, you find it throughout the Torah. As the thigh is, for example, when it says that Avram's progeny, in the beginning of Shemot, it says that it came out, Yotzu, Miyerech Yaakov, something like that, from the thigh of Jacob, when Yaakov is struck in his thigh by the angel, right? When he's wrestling with the angel, and he's struck in the thigh. So there are some references in the Midrashim that Esav's angel was trying to affect his ability to procreate and therefore continue the line of the Jewish people. Okay, so there's references in this kind of thing. So what does Shaddai say? Lo nimsa haminhag hazeh elekan ubi Yosef. We don't find throughout Tanakh anybody doing this except for here and by Yosef in Bereishit Mem Zayin Chaf Tet. V'razal pirshu, and Chazal understand, and Rashi quotes this in Shavuot Namachan Amavet, shehu kitat chefet shel mitzvah, that it was holding a chefet shel mitzvah, kamo sefer Torah tefillin, lishavala, like a sefer Torah tefillin to swear on it. V'dat Ibn Ezra v'rashbam v'rozinius. Okay, Ibn Ezra, Rashbam, and an Italian, or maybe German, Rosius or something, all hold that you should not take it as if he is holding the bris milah, but rather that he's literally putting a hand under the thigh. Why? Why would you put Rashi, obviously, that's what motivates Rashi, is like, why would you put your hand under someone's thigh this way?
Shows that you're reliant on him.
Ah, very good. That's what the Ibn Ezra and Rashbam say, right? Shehu derech shibud. It shows that, my hands are under, literally subservient to you, right? So, literally under you. This is how a servant shows that they are loyal to their master. Uben la'aviv. And also how a son would do that to his father. Okay, so that's the idea, is that it's a demonstration of shibud, of submission, and maybe that removes a little bit of the weirdness, the strangeness of it. Okay, so that's Shaddai again against Rashi, right, in both places, and supporting basically the Rashbam. Now one more, let's do it, is we mentioned, is it racism? Does he just hate the Canaanites? What's the reason why he doesn't want a Yitzchak to marry a Canaanite? Asher lo kitigach isha livnei bimnot haKnani, that you have to swear to me that you won't seek out the Canaanite women for my son. So what's the reason? Shaddai says, she'im hayim mitchatein mahem, because if he were to marry them, lo yitachin liyisrael orisha k'nani maratzo, the Israelites would never be allowed, or would never want to perhaps, expel the Canaanites from their land. Right? When they come back from Egypt, they would come into the land of Israel. They would see the Canaanites, and what would their reaction be? They would give them a big hug and say, brothers, our forefather Yitzchak was married to one of your Canaanite women. We are descended from the same people. And Avram wanted to make sure that the Israelites would be able to get the land fully without feeling like they're removing their brothers from their midst. Right? He said, "Lo yitakin liyisol l'rish kanani meretzo achrei yoyotam achim." If they were brothers, then they wouldn't be able to remove these people. Kemosh lo hitgaru milchama b'moav amon ve'adom. Like, we don't do that. Like the Torah says, don't antagonize certain nations that are in the land of Israel because they are related to you. So, for example, Moab, Ammon, Edom, right? The Moab, for example, is from Lot. Lot is Avram's nephew. So, like, we're not supposed to antagonize them for this reason. And he also mentions, and he says that's the reason why the Torah, throughout the whole story, what's the purpose of the entire story of how Yitzchak finds a wife? The entire point is to tell you, the reader, who's in the desert. Remember that Shadal always like seems to think about the audience of the reception of the Torah. He says, think about, they're about to go into the land of Israel. And Avram specifically sought someone other than the Canaanites to marry off his son. It's to make sure that you understand that you're also supposed to avoid the Canaanites. Don't intermingle with them. Don't intermarry with them. And stay your own people, because like this is the promise of God. This is God's promise to you, that you will inherit the land and remove the inhabitants that had been there. And you might remember from what Shadal says on Haknani Az Ba'aretz, a very similar idea. Shkoya.